Brokaw Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper
is here,
brought to you by Arca Deck. We'll get you ready for your weekend movie viewing.
Let's do it.
All right, now, let's see here.
Got some couple, three movies.
Let's see here. Let me see if it's a, are we spending or are we saving? What are we doing here? Pacific Rim Uprising. Do you want to do that one
first?
Yeah,
let's do that first. All right. About 5 years ago, we had Pacific Rim, which was directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
Ooh. Newly minted Oscar winner. So it was this kind of cool rock'em sock'em robots monster movie set in the Pacific Rim of the near future, right? Because there were these creatures that came from the sea, like Godzilla-like. And then humankind invented these giant robot creatures to fight them. And the pilots would be in the heads of the robots, working them like rock'em sock'em robots. Kind of cool, right?
It was a beautiful film to watch.
And that, as we know, Del Toro's visuals are incredible, right? Yeah. And it had that Idris Elba, who's a big star, and Charlie Hunnam, who was one of the stars of Sons of Anarchy. They're not in this one. And this movie's directed by a guy whose name is not Guillermo del Toro. So you got your sequel here. Now, it does have a pretty interesting cast. In fact, we got a clip here. Now, you're going to hear somebody with a British accent. That's John Boyega, who's in who's in the Star Wars movies.
Yep, like him.
And you're also going to hear his... So he's kind of Maverick, you know, the pilot that's kind of always getting in trouble. And then there's a guy named Lambert in this movie who's actually played by Scott Eastwood. Son of Clint.
He says it's impossible to get a job in Hollywood, by the way.
Because his name is Scott Eastwood?
Well, he said he thought it would have been easier because his name is Scott Eastwood, and he's upset that he has to audition like everybody else.
A nice job.
Well, he could have changed his name to Scott McGillicuddy if he really thought that was going to be the problem.
Actors don't use their real names.
Yeah, here's a shocker. Okay, so here they are. Yeah, now, it looks like there could be another uprising in the Pacific Rim.
How you doing, Nate?
It's Ranger Lambert.
Are you having a laugh?
Well, this is a military base. You remember how that works? Ranger Pentecost. And you must be Amara Namani.
Yes, sir. Ranger, sir.
Well, let's get you squared away. Oh, and try not to steal anything while you're here.
Did that haircut just call you Pentecost? As in badass Dacker Pentecost? Pilot of Coyote Tango, hero of basically the whole world?
It's just a name.
Yeah, really cool name.
So that's where we find out that the John Boyega character is actually the son of Idris Elba, who is the hero who gave his own life for the cause in the original. Yes. So now it's 10 years later, and it looks like there could be another war between the monsters. And it goes through all the typical monster movie cliches. It looks a lot like a Transformers movie, really. And most of it is just these fights between these big, giant creatures. And it's obviously CGI, and it's not interesting. And they don't try to do anything original. It's one of those movies where every cliche is embraced. And you get the people back in the control room who are always telling the pilots things like, "You've got to get out of there now!" Well, they know that! They see the fireball hurling toward them. Get out of there now! I always want a pilot to go, "You're making it worse!" So we're going to give it 2 stars. Pacific Rim Uprising. It feels, you know, the first movie did really well, especially internationally, because, of course, it did have that international cast, and it was all about the visuals, not the dialogue. And as you mentioned, it's, you know, it was a great-looking film. This just looks like a cheap knockoff.
All right.
Unnecessary. So let's move on from that one.
I was looking forward to it because Pacific Rim, the first Pacific Rim was surprisingly good. You expect it to be. I waited for it to come out on the cable or something, and I'm just surfing one day and I land on it and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool looking.
I had no idea this is going to be this good.
And it kind of played off of some of the, you know, Godzilla type of cliches. This one just is a Godzilla movie. You know, there's no self-referential moment here. None of that kind of stuff. So very disappointing.
Oh, man.
It's kind of a junk sequel. Now, let's talk about Unsane. Not Insane, but Unsane, okay? Now, Unsane is something that's a really intriguing premise. So, Claire Foy, who's in one of them royal shows, I think The Crown, right?
She's terrific, right? The current young Queen Elizabeth.
Yes.
Yeah. She's Claire about Foy. To lose her gig next season to an older Queen
That's
Elizabeth.
What I'm hearing. There's some sort of, you know, they're going to move. But well, she's
and
now.
And she's the one, by the way, this is she was just in the news.
Yeah.
She's the one that was making less than the actor who's playing Prince Philip, and she's the star of the show. And so the producers of The Crown had to apologize to her. It's unclear if they paid her anything, but they had
to
apologize to her.
So sorry.
Yes.
So now she's in. This movie's directed by Steven Soderbergh, who's, you know, a legendary director who goes all the way back to Sex, Lies, and Videotape, did the Ocean's movies, Aaron Brockovich, Magic Mike, and he's got this incredible track record. Mm-hmm. He keeps saying he's going to retire, and then he produces another TV series and makes another movie. The premise of this kind of really, I really dug this. So Claire Foy plays a young woman. She's at, you know, maybe 30 years old. She's got a good job, a good career. She's recently moved to a new city because she had a stalker in her previous life and she wanted to get away from him. But she seems like, you know, she's got it all together, although she's still haunted by this stalker and she's dealing with some issues. So she decides to go to a mental health facility and just wants to talk to somebody, you know, mm-hmm. about her depression and the fact that she still sometimes thinks she's seeing the stalker. And they have her fill out some paperwork. And next thing you know, she's being locked up in a room. She's committed herself and she doesn't realize it, which, you know, everybody kind of, that's one of those great fears you have. Like if you were in a mental institution and the more you say, I'm not crazy, do I look like I would hurt anybody? And then you struggle and then you get in a fight. The deeper you dig yourself into it and you go, I'm going to sue all of you. Do I look like I have any problems? And that's what happens to her in this movie.
Oh, what a great
So premise. We've got a scene here, that her first night in the institution. And the woman in the bed next to her is played by Juno Temple, who clearly and legitimately is crazy.
Oh, what? You think you're too good to talk to me now, Allison?
Oh, my name's not Allison, but yeah. Yeah, I am too good to talk to you.
Hey, bitch. Listen, when you fall asleep, I'm going to cut your hair off. All of your hair.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
With what? They let you anywhere near sharp objects? I doubt that very much. Oh, God, you're scaring me to death, you mental patient. I'll be thinking about you when I'm back in my own bed, in my own house, getting ready to go to my own job.
Ooh, I like this.
Or so you think. So through a lot of the film, she does start seeing her stalker. He's got a new name. He's now working at the institution. But we're not sure, is she really seeing this? Is it real? Mm. Or is she really somebody who's deeply delusional? And Soderbergh does a great job of, you know, we get deeper and deeper into it. Kind of has a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest vibe. I thought Claire Foy was really good here. The other fascinating thing about this movie is Steven Soderbergh shot the entire film on his iPhone.
What?
The entire movie was shot with iPhones.
Is that possible?
Not just, you know, people go, oh, did he just do it for some shots? No, everything. And he you know, that's because he's one of these guys. He's like, you know, he's like the great guitarist that says, oh, let me play with that plastic ukulele and see if I can make something cool. And he pulls it off. You wouldn't know that if I didn't tell you that. I mean, you're not going to get some overhead shots and stuff, but it's a great looking film. I'm giving it 3 stars. It really goes deep into the film before we really know for sure how much of this is real, how much of this might be Fight Club-esque, and whether or not our lead character there, played by Claire Foy, really should be locked up for life, or if, as she thinks, it's a way for these institutions to get a lot of money from insurance companies. So they commit you for a day, and then for 7 days, and then for 14 days, and then whenever Blue Cross Blue Shield or Aetna decides that they don't want to pay anymore, then they decide, you're better! And they let you out.
Ooh. So it's like a psychological thriller thing.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure it out. I like that.
All seen really from her point of view, you know, ooh. Where she, you know, and of course they're giving her the medication. She does that classic thing of hiding it in the back of her mouth and then spit it out. You know, they always do that.
I do that in my own house.
Right. Uh-huh. You know that move.
When I give myself the medication, I do it.
Just in case anyone's watching.
Yeah. In case I'm watching.
But don't you always think about that? Like you see certain movies and you're like, oh, if I had committed that crime, I would have gotten away with it by doing this. Or if there were a ghost in my house, I would do this. Or if I were, you know, committed to an institution, here's how I would let everybody know I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
But she does all that. She calls her mom and she gets lawyers involved. But still, the more she struggles, the more it seems like, well, maybe we should watch you for another day or two.
Yeah. I still can't get over this iPhone thing because I'm thinking that Steven Soderbergh, who we had the great pleasure of interviewing a number of years ago, he's a master, a grand master of cinematic arts, and I get that it's a little bit of a stunty thing to do it with an iPhone, but I don't feel like plunking down, you know, $18 for a movie ticket in the nice seats. To watch a guy make a movie the same way Violetta does.
Well, you know, that I could see that. And some people have said that, you know, part of it is he wanted to show, too. He said, like, you know, even with the most sophisticated special effects and cameras, there are some things that are really hard to do with very bulky setups. And he said, you know, with iPhones, you can move around. I mean, he had more than one person shooting. And he also, they were able to shoot scenes out in public without going through the rigmarole of closing down streets and getting permits and rigging up big things. Because he would just be across the street with his iPhone. down. Now we're saying, ooh, we're kind of getting that point of view where it looks like the stalker is watching her. So it sort of works for the film.
Form and function right there.
All there you go.
Okay. All right, fine. I still don't like the idea.
I'm into it. Yeah. I like this one.
All right. Richard Roper is being brought to you by Arkadek. Now, I want to tell you that coming up, Midnight Sun. Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of interesting. Patrick Schwarzenegger is in this movie. Now, that's a name I've heard before.
Another one of those guys. Now, you just can't get work in this business. By the way, I'll be starring in a movie this weekend.
But big failure. Big failure.
He didn't change his name.
We got an Eastwood and a Schwarzenegger in movies this week.
And they're not Clint nor Arnold.
If only we had a Rumor Willis, we could say, you know, Schwarzenegger, Eastwood, and Willis. It's like 1989 all over again.
All right. Well, we'll come back. This is going to be very interesting. I can't wait to hear about this from Richard Roper. As I said, brought to you by Arkadek. Here is Judy telling us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour news.
They're Chicago, they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Kadish, and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News team, weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Richard Roper is here, brought to you by Arkadek. All right, let's talk about movies, and let's talk about Midnight Sun.
Midnight Sun, starring Bella Thorne. She's one of those Disney TV actresses, very, very popular on the social media. Beautiful young redhead. Mm-hmm. And she plays Katie, a lovely young high school senior who has one of those rare movie diseases called XP. And that prevents her from ever going out during daylight hours. Mm-hmm. If she's exposed to the sun, it could prove fatal. Mm-hmm. So she lives in a house on the hill, and her dad, played by Rob Riggle. We like Rob Riggle, right? He's been in a ton of stuff. Usually comedic, but he's actually kind of a dramatic role. And just to ladle it on even thicker, mom died when little Katie was just 4. So now it's just dad. And dad's having a bad run. Really, you know, he loses mom, and then the daughter.
Kev, what would you say about that?
He's not having a good run.
He's not having a good run. Okay. So last year we had Everything. Now, in that movie, the young high school girl, she couldn't go outside at all because exposure to the air would kill her.
Okay.
Now, this one, only exposure to the sun. But they decide in this movie that because she can't go out in the sun, that she's been isolated her whole life, which from the start to me made no sense because I'm like, well, if she can go out at night.
In Chicago, so in the winter, you can go out a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, that's the first thing I was thinking. You know, they could just move to one of those places where they have 6 months of darkness, and Katie could be like the homecoming queen. No one would even know.
She was.
But they never seem to acknowledge this. She's isolated in her house.
Wait, does that mean, let me just ask you this question. Does that mean that she can't go out during the day, but could she go to Concrete Cowboy at night?
Yes.
With Violetta and her friends?
Theoretically.
She's totally welcome.
And that's the thing that's weird about this movie, because it never seems to occur to anybody. So she's homeschooled. She has one friend who comes and visits her. And then the Schwarzenegger kid plays Charlie, the sweet and handsome boy who skateboards past her house every day from the time he's 7 till 17. They finally meet up. And then she's like, Dad, can I go out? And he's like, you know, well, yeah, I guess so. And it's like, it never occurred to you? I mean, she could have gone. She could have got a job at Pizza Hut. She could have gone to school plays. She's never left the house, essentially. It makes no sense. So now,
she's allowed to go out?
Now, because Charlie wants to take her out. So they embark on this, you know, this
at
very
night. Always show. A Charlie.
It's night.
It's always a Charlie.
I wouldn't trust Charlie.
Well, that's the other weird thing, because all summer long he keeps saying, well, let's do something tomorrow. She's like, well, I'm busy during the day. And he never says, why are you always busy during the day? Oh, here's a scene where I think this is the scene where Charlie's finally going to meet Pops, because he's going to take her out again at night.
Is that what you go by? You go by Charlie, not Chuck or Chucky or C-Town?
No, sir. Just Charlie's.
Charlie, okay. You ever been arrested?
No, sir.
When's your curfew?
It's 1 a.m.
What time do you actually get home?
Like 2.
That's not 1 o'clock, is it, Charlie?
No, sir, it's
not. And you said your curfew was 1.
Yeah.
Relax, I'm not a cop.
That's kind of cute.
Rob Riggle was a Marine, by the way.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thing about Rob. Yeah. He can play that role.
That's, you know, the kind of scary dad. So, you know, it's very sweet. And of course, she plays music because her mommy played music, and all her songs are like little pop confections about, you know, what one's called Charlie's song because it's about Charlie. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the whole thing of the movie is she won't tell Charlie about her condition because she just wants to have a normal romance. But it's like you're only seeing him at night in the summertime. You should probably tell him just in case, let's say, you fall asleep one night on the beach and all of a sudden the sun's coming up, which maybe happens in this movie. Oh. And all of a sudden, she's suddenly
yeah,
like,
yeah, it has to be that
Charlie,
moment.
You got to get me home. And even as he's driving her home, she doesn't say, if the sun hits my face, I die. So he just thinks she's in trouble with Pops. So it's just too strange of a premise to carry through. It's very sweet, and everybody's very earnest. I like that Bella Thorne, and I like the Schwarzenegger kid, and they're cute together. But the whole conflict is whether or not he's ever going to find out that she's got don't go out in the sun disease. And of course he's going to find out. And then they give her some really good dying girl makeup where she still looks like Bella Thorne, Instagram model, but has like some, check out my dying girl makeup, Charlie. Two stars.
Midnight Sun. 2 stars too soon, as it turns out, for this particular.
Get the kid a hoodie and she can go to class tomorrow. You know?
All right. Well, we're sorry. We thought we had something there.
Yeah.
All right. So basically you're saying Unsane is probably the pick of the weekend?
Yeah.
All right.
If you're in the mood for a real scary psychological thriller. Next week, we have Ready Player One, that huge Spielberg movie.
I cannot wait for that movie.
So we'll pop in and talk about that maybe middle of next week.
All right. Spielberg.
Yeah.
What has he ever done?
Yeah. Up and comer.